A new study from the University of Florida finds that toilet paper should be considered a potential source of PFAS chemicals entering wastewater treatment systems. Researchers there looked at 21 major toilet paper brands from the U.S. and around the world. They found traces of these so-called forever chemicals in all of them. PFAS is a group of over 6,000 synthetic chemicals found in the consumer products we use every day. Anything that's nonstick, stain-resistant, grease-resistant, or waterproof might have PFAS chemicals in them. Plus, it's a big part of some firefighting technology. Even at low concentrations, some PFAS chemicals have been linked to negative health outcomes like thyroid disease, diabetes, and cancer. Our next guest has been researching PFAS contamination in Wisconsin and says most of the contamination in our state has been found in groundwater, our largest source of drinking water. Christy Remicall is an associate professor of civil and environmental engineering, director of the Water Science and Engineering Laboratory, and co-director of the Core Facility for Advanced Water Analysis at UW-Madison. Christy, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We've got this study saying six different PFAS compounds in toilet paper. The American Forest and Paper Association says we're not adding these to toilet paper. What do you think of yet another product on the list of potential sources of PFAS chemicals?
Well, I mean, you're right. I feel like we hear about new places that have PFAS every day. PFAS have been found in other paper products as well. So on one hand, it's not a surprise. It's a little unclear why they're in toilet paper. But we also know that there is plenty of PFAS that makes its way to wastewater treatment plants. And so it does make sense that they're there.
Now, you've been following this story in Wisconsin for some time now. What, as far as we know right now, what are the main sources of these PFAS chemicals in our water here in Wisconsin?
Well, when we look here in Wisconsin specifically, as you said in the intro, a lot of our contamination is found in groundwater, which is our really highly important water resource in the state. In many cases, contamination is associated with the use of PFAS-containing firefighting foams. And so we often find high concentrations near airports or military installations. There are other sources as well, but those are some of the big ones that we think about.
Now, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, last month proposed limiting levels in drinking water to pretty low levels that tests are able to detect. That would put a lot of communities here in Wisconsin at higher than recommended levels. What are you looking at when you look at standards to say, okay, this much is safe, this much isn't?
Right. Well, it's great that the EPA is finally putting out proposed standards. It's long overdue that we have federal regulations for these chemicals because we know they're toxic at low concentrations. The concentrations they proposed as standards were quite a bit higher than the health advisories, and they were trying to balance, you know, having utilities be able to meet these requirements with protecting human health. And so, like I said, they're long overdue that we have standards being proposed.
What do you see as the best way to try to keep PFAS out of our water in the future? What would be your number one strategy?
Well, exactly what you said is keeping the most important thing we can do is keeping these chemicals from getting in the environment in the first place. So decreasing their use in firefighting foams is a good example, but also decreasing their use in consumer products, things that we use every day. So people can choose to pick products that don't have PFAS. Anything we can do to prevent these chemicals from getting in the environment in the first place is important because they're so persistent and mobile. They last such a long time. So it's really prevention is the key approach here.
They're in so many products, presumably because they are useful in making things nonstick mm-hmm. or making effective firefighting foams. Is there a thought that these are replaceable for the things we want, or at least if not, that the benefits of getting rid of them outweigh the cost of not using them?
You're absolutely right. They are really, you know, that these chemicals have a lot of great applications, and so they're in things that we love. You know, think about your Teflon pan at home. It's nice to not have to scrub to clean off your pan. However, there are definitely alternatives. You know, we use cast iron and things like that at my house. There are different things you can use. Lots of different products coming out there as, you know, companies are starting to make more products that don't have PFAS because of increased attention to them. And so there are alternatives we can choose for many cases.
If we were today somehow to stop all PFAS use, how long would it take to deal with the chemicals that are already in our groundwater and other water systems?
Oh, goodness, you're right. I mean, we do have quite a legacy of contamination to deal with. Some of the chemicals that we're measuring and finding in our water were put there decades ago. And, you know, as you mentioned, we're really concerned about very low concentrations in our water. And so we have quite a bit of work to do to clean up the mess that already exists.
Now, we've got communities like Wausau trying to treat all the water for PFAS, seeing some financial shortfalls. Eau Claire planning to build a filtration addition to its water treatment plant. A lot of communities. What goes into filtering PFAS out of water supplies?
Yeah, and what we're doing now with a lot of the water treatment applications is filtering the PFAS out, and then you have this contaminated filter that you have to deal with at the end. We don't yet have a good large-scale destructive technology for these chemicals. This is something that's happening at the research stage right now. But you can basically think about many of these filters. They use activated carbon. That's the most common one. It's kind of like a really big Brita filter, and that's what's removing the PFAS from municipal water treatment supplies. And you're right, they can be quite costly, especially for small utilities.
A key here is, you know, some pollutants, they're going to break down on their own over time. People call PFAS forever chemicals. Really, these, they just don't break down, at least on a human timeline?
There are, you know, so the ones that we worry about, like PFOS and PFOA, do not have any known natural degradation processes that we know about right now. They do last a very long time. Some PFAS do degrade, and they transform into the ones that don't degrade. And so, you know, like PFOA is a really good example. They last a very long time, and that's why they're called forever chemicals.
We're obviously concerned about drinking water here in the state. How about Great Lakes and water finding its way in there? Is this becoming a substantial problem, potentially an environmental risk there?
PFAS have been measured in every environment on the planet. Of course, they're found in the Great Lakes. The concentrations tend to increase as you move from like the Western Lakes, like Superior is relatively low compared to Erie and Ontario, where concentrations are higher. And you worry about concentrations in fish in some of these lakes. PFAS have really been found around the planet. You know, even in the Arctic, places far away from people, you find PFAS really everywhere. It's really a global issue.
And your work, just in our last few moments, involves PFAS in rivers and streams that go into Green Bay and the Great Lakes. Briefly, what is a big question you're still tackling?
Yeah, so we're looking at where these chemicals are coming from. So in rivers, as well as groundwater that's coming into the lake, we're looking at sources of these chemicals and really how these chemicals move in the environment. And the idea is to not, you know, if you can understand where they're coming from, prevent pollution. And then if you know kind of where they're ending up, thinking about how to inform remediation efforts in the future.
Christy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks.
Christy Remekal is an associate professor of civil and environmental engineering, director of the Water Science and Engineering Laboratory, and co-director of the Core Facility for Advanced Water Analysis at UW-Madison. She joined us today with a look at how PFAS chemicals are contaminating our water supply and what we can do to prevent it in the future. This is a story in your community. Love to hear about it. Maybe it's something we could tackle in a future show or pass on to our news team for that matter. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.